Blog Talk Radio.
I got so many theories and suspicions. I'm diagnosed with real nigga condition. Today is the day I follow my intuition. Keep the family close, get money for bitches. I double park the Austin in the red. My mama told me that I'ma work myself to death. My girl told me don't let these hoes get in my head. My world been ecstatic, I checked the signals that read. Buzzing, radar's in buzzing. Yeah, yeah. Fox News wanna use my name for percentage. My latest news is my niece, she worth living. See me on the TV and scream, that's Uncle Kendrick. Yeah, that's the business. Somebody tell Gerardo this nigga got some ambition. I'm not a politician, I'm not about a religion. I'm an Israelite, don't call me black no more. That word is only a color, it ain't facts no more. My cousin Carl, Duckworth said know my words. And Deuteronomy say that we all been cursed. I know he walks the earth, but it's money to get, bitches to hit. Yeah, zeros to flip, temptation is, yeah, first on my list, I can't resist, yeah. Everyone together now, know that we forever buzzing. Radar is buzzing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Buzzing. Radar is buzzing. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You know, in Augusta, Georgia, I used to shine shoes on the steps of a radio station, WRDW. I think we started at 3 cents, and we went to 5 and 6, never did get to a dime. But today, I own that radio station. You know what that is? That's Black Power. Right here.
Don't tell me no other place, I don't know nothing. Talk about my home, just give me some Georgia, some Alabama, some Mississippi, some New York, and some California, Texas, and some North Carolina, and some South Carolina, and Virginia, some Illinois, and some West Virginia, some Dakota, South Dakota, North Dakota. See, I can't name all the different places now. If I leave anybody out, don't get mad, because I just, you know, just a cat trying to keep it going. Some Ohio, too, yeah. Some Indiana, Michigan. Yeah, I'm coming from the good Kentucky, Tennessee. Yeah, I'm getting it together, you know. Just give me a little time.
All right. Alito, Oshel, this is El Rosmith. Hey, you are listening to another show, another broadcast of our Talk Tongues of America. Indigenous Agriculture, Part 5 of a 12-part series, okay? Got my co-host with me, you know, she's going to do her thing. She may ask some questions. She also a moderator, you know, keep me on track if I stray too far away from the topic, culture and gardening. And before we begin, I like to thank the Ankh Esters and the great ones before me for allowing me to use this platform to give out this information to my people and to the world. All right, I say, that being said, we're going to move on and get right into it. Okay, we're going to deal with specifically the Southeastern Indigenous Agriculture, okay, of Amatakapana, Turtle Island, Northwest Amexum, okay, and I'm also 10 minutes deep in the show. I'm going to pause, and then that's going to give some Q&A time if you have any questions, and then 20 minutes deep, I'm going to pause again for more questions or answers or any comments y'all want to have, okay, that's really the rules, basically, okay, let's begin. And I'm going to read from an article, okay? This is from Chata Anumpa Kingba. This is the School of Choctaw Language. Okay, this authorized website of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma. All right. And it says, Traditional Choctaw Agriculture Part 1, okay? And it says, May was a busy month for Choctaw people, okay? The height of spring. This is May. It will find communities working together to get their crops planted in the warm soil, anticipating bountiful harvest later in the summer and fall. As the crops ripen, there will be feasts of fresh vegetables. Later, the majority of the harvest will be dried in the sun and placed in storage bins or hung on strings from the rafters of houses, where it will remain until it was taken down in cook time during the next year. Food grown in agricultural fields has long been the backbone of the Choctaw diet. Okay. Notice they did not mention meat. They said vegetables, fruits, okay, plants. All right. Because we are a chlorophyll-based people. Choctaw people have been recognized as the best agriculturalists of the southeastern tribes. However, our earliest ancestors were not. This is according to this website. Some of the stuff. Okay. They always like to add in half truth and lies in there. So we're going to skip over that because we know our indigenous ancestors were agriculturally based people in tune with nature and the earth. Okay. All right, let's continue on. It goes on to say, let's keep scrolling down here. Keep moving down, scrolling down. Okay, according to Choctaw oral tradition and archaeological research, corn was domesticated in Mexico and then brought northward. Okay. As you can see, corn was domesticated in the south, which is in Mexico, and brought northward. So that means it was brought down in the south, which is usually where indigenous melanin-rich people are located, and brought up north. So if we're using critical thinking skills, if we're using our common sense as well, if the food was brought from the south to the north, doesn't that mean the people had to be from the south and be or migrated or moved to the north? Wouldn't you think that the people had to come from below or from the south and then go to the north? You know, using critical thinking, just connecting the dots, right? And if that's the case, how can the earliest people be from the Bering Strait, which is in the north. And they say that's where the Native Americans came from, the north, and they migrated downward. That's a lie. That's just traditional, conventional, orthodox thought. It's not even indigenous. We don't teach this in indigenous schools or in any indigenous American culture. They never say they came from the north and went down south. It's always they come up from the south, and then they migrated to the north. So that's how you can tell the whole Bering Strait theory is a lie. We were already here from the bottom. Many of the times we came from the ocean and from the islands, and then we traveled from the islands, such as, you know, Guatemala, near that area, near Chile, especially the West Indies even, okay, Jamaica, right? And then even Haiti, okay, Galapagos Islands, and then we went upward, okay? You know, I always look at the patterns. The food came up from the bottom to the top, just like the people came from the bottom to the top, okay? But anyway, yeah. Continue on reading. I'm going to read from another article, and this is Southeastern Indian Agriculture, okay? And it says, the southeastern woodlands is an area which is bounded by the Ozark-Wichita Highlands of Arkansas and Missouri and the dry plains of eastern Texas on the west and the low plateaus of Kentucky and Tennessee and the interior plains of Illinois on the north. Okay. Now, this is the farming. They say the primary crops were corn, beans, squash, and tobacco along the creeks and bottomlands near the villages. Okay, the area will be cleared by cutting and burning. The ashes of the burnt wood and cane will then nourish the plants. So the ashes is very rich. It's a high nitrogen content that can be found within ashes when you burn. You burn organic material down. It acts as a fertilizer, okay? But this is why you get some gardening techniques where they burn down, or agricultural techniques where they burn down a forest or area. They're also clearing the land, but two, they're also providing fertilizer and making a layer of substance on the top of the soil that will actually give their plants food to grow on and make them grow stronger. So it's kind of a two-part reason for burning the forest or burning the dead land to grow on. Because one, you don't have to do as much labor if you burn that area or field where you want to grow stuff at, but you're also providing a fertilizer source, okay? And the farming practice of the southeastern Indians did not rapidly exhaust the soil. Okay, like mainstream commercialized agriculture, industrial agricultural methods, conventional agricultural methods, where they're using thousands, tens of thousands of acres and growing just one specific vegetable, one specific plant on thousands of acres, pleading and exhausting the soil. You're taking one plant. Think about it. You're taking one plant which needs certain nutrients from the soil, and it's just leaching all those nutrients, and they're using just the same plot of land year after year. What's going to happen to the soil? Eventually, that soil will have no nutrients, no type of growth can be produced in that soil because there is nothing to give to the plant, okay? So what's going to happen? What do they have to do? They have to start bringing in chemical fertilizers. They don't have to, but this is what the conventional method is. and they start adding these chemical fertilizers which further destroy and break down and even just kill off the organic matter and life that was in the soil in the first place. So now it's just, they're creating deserts. Okay? But with the Tata Yamasi, our indigenous agricultural methods, what we use, we never, ever depleted the soil like this. We always had, there's something called crop rotation. There's also a method called companion planting. Okay? And I'm going to just pause right there, so hold on to that thought. Okay? Companion planting and crop rotation. Now's the time. If you have any questions or comments, feel free to call in. Now's your time. How does my audio sound? I'm outside right now. Let me know if the wind affecting my voice. Is the audio still clear or not? That is a yes. All right, let's continue. So I was speaking about crop rotation and companion planting. What is crop rotation? Crop rotation is basically the technique of growing a certain food in an area for a certain period of time and then to a different area of land through each growing season, okay, allowing the soil to rest and replenish itself from and its nutrients. So there's never an exhaustion of nutrients from the soil or a soil depletion, okay, which can lead to soil erosion, okay. So, for instance, if you have corn and you're just growing corn in one spot, it's going to take up constantly all of the nutrients that it needs in order to grow, all the nutrients, which is mainly nitrogen, phosphorus, right, and potassium. Eventually, if you keep growing that corn in that one spot without replenishing the soil, it will cause soil depletion and erosion. But crop rotation eliminates that because each crop is moved into a different area, allowing the soil to rest and replenish itself. Okay? So that's crop rotation. So you grow corn, instead of just leaching out the soil, you grow corn for one season, bam. You grow squash for one season in that area where the corn was. Then you grow beans in that one season where the squash was. So it's a constant replenishment of the soil, and you never exhaust your soil. Okay? Because that's where that's the key, the foundation of growing. Okay, having healthy fruits and vegetables, you have to start with the soil, all right? Now, we just went over crop rotation. Now, what is companion planting? Companion planting is an indigenous, it's an ancient technique, okay? And it is the method of growing more than one plant within a growing season in one space, while at the same time providing a relationship. It's like a symbiotic relationship where one and more plants are each benefiting each other. Okay, so they're coexisting together. For instance, the same old technique that everyone should know about. If you haven't, it's, you're just out of there. But it's squash, corn, and beans. It's called the Three Sisters. Today is known as companion planting. The squash, is grown together with the corn and the beans. Let me show you how this symbiotic relationship works. The corn grows in the soil. It needs nitrogen, high nitrogen soil to grow and reach its full potential and height, because it has to reach over 6 feet. Nitrogen source from their roots. They produce nitrogen within their root molecules in the soil, providing that extra boost that the corn needs. In turn, the squash provides the shade for the beans. The corn provides a climbing, it provides a trellis-like structure or something to climb on that the beans need. Because most beans are usually pole beans, which means they have tendrils that climb, okay? So they must go up. And the corn provides that means, so it's a symbiotic relationship that these three plants have. But it's more than just companion planting, just the corn, squash, and the bean. Okay, there's also the tomato and the basil companion planting group that go together. There's certain plants that you cannot plant together, because if you do, they will harm each other. Okay, that's awesome.
I have a question.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
For people at home who are trying to grow the three sisters, how do we, like, establish a gardening bed to where the weeds and things don't start to come in? Like, how do we tend to that without overdoing it and making it a problem instead of letting it grow naturally?
Right, that's a great question. Yeah, to eliminate, I mean, you could just about eliminate the need to pull weeds or, well, they're not really weeds, but any kind of plants that you don't want growing, and taking up some of the growing space and nutrients that the plants that you planted in there, it's a good solution is called probably wood mulch would be best. Wood mulch is basically shredded wood, cedar mulch, and there's many kinds of mulches you can use, many materials. You can even use pine needles as a mulch, and what else? Shredded leaves as another mulch that can eliminate that growth of weeds. Okay. Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. You said you wanted to figure out, can you eliminate just all the weed growth and everything?
Naturally, without, like, you know, pesticides or harming the natural habitat of, you know, like the other things around it.
Right, right. Okay, yeah, mulch is one route you can go with. Another route is, like, if you already have weeds and you just want to, and they're already established and you just want to remove them, you can use different kind of techniques. Like, you could, there's a technique called boiling water. Well, you can just boil water to a higher temperature and pour them on the weeds and remove them, because that'll kill the roots. But that's kind of iffy. Like, if you already have plants growing, you might not want to do that. There's a plant. This technique you can use is making a vinegar spray, like half vinegar and half water, 50-50 ratio. And you can spray that on the weeds. That'll kill weeds.
Okay.
And most times, like, the technique I use that just literally eliminates having weeds is called lasagna gardening, where you create a raised bed, you know, have 4x4s and just make a square or rectangle or triangle or however any other shape you want. And you just cover that material up with newspaper or cardboard first, and then you layer on the green material, like shredded leaves or whatever, grass or any kind of green material, and then your brown material, which is basically just shredded bark, you know, anything that's brown, like dead leaves, So you have like a 50-50 brown and green material, and you add that, and that will actually, you know, eliminate. And once you make these layers, because you're making layers, that's why it's called lasagna garnet. And then once you have it about as high as your box, then you can add on, you can literally just grow right into that. So, I mean, yeah, the lasagna garnet pretty much eliminates any kind of weed control. So, yeah. And I like this for tuning in. This is El Ross Smith Bay. We're about to go into overtime. If you have any questions, feel free to call in now. And I see no one has called in. So, yeah, you can continue. We can continue the dialogue since we're in overtime now. It's past 11 o'clock.
Okay, so basically, I should try the lasagna gardening technique, and that will help me eliminate the weeds and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah, I would recommend that. Yeah, it's a pretty good bet.
Okay, well, I really appreciate that because I have been wondering for a while how to counteract the weeds, because I have, like, I've been trying to grow tomatoes, and there's, like, weeds that are, like, well, I don't know, I don't even call them weeds, but, like, they're just, like, you know, taking over the space.
Yeah, it's like you're right. If you've been planting, it's just gone wild. Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, you can just grow containers. Like you were saying earlier, so you can just grow containers. It's just the only thing about that. You just have to make sure you have some water, you know, and then dry out. And that's the simple route to go container gardening. And just having those buckets. And I believe it's still growing season as far as just like nurseries or just Home Depot's or any other hardware store or nursery that carries, you know, plants and vegetables, seedlings. You can still purchase those if you don't want to start from the seed.
Right.
Yeah.
Is there a way to grow aloe vera at home?
Oh, yeah. Those are great. Those are very great, agreeable plants to grow as well. Especially even in dry climates, they do pretty well. So, yeah.
Okay.
From seed. I usually see the aloe vera in, usually in a seedling. I haven't seen any small aloe vera seeds at all. So, yeah, they're usually in a small plant size already growing. Yeah, they're real easy to grow, like I said, so, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Oh, yeah, no problem. You got any more questions?
No, that's it.
Okay, sweet. Guess I'm going to go ahead and end the show, man. All
right. Salam.
All right, salam, babe. Okay. Clues. Another episode of on our Talk Times of America Network, Indigenous Agriculture, part 5 of a 12-part series. I'd like to thank everyone for tuning in. I'd like to thank co-hosts for riding with me. And I'll be on tomorrow at 10 o'clock p.m. Central Time Zone. And with that being said, it's your most valuable possession, because without it, you are no one. Enjoy the rest of your night. Wanishi. Thank you.
You know, in Augusta, Georgia, I used to shine shoes on the steps of radio station WRDW. I think we started at 3 cents, and we went to 5 and 6, Never did get to a dime. But today, I own that radio station. You know what that is? That's Black Power. Right here.
Don't send me no other place. I don't know nothing. Talk about my home. Just give me some Georgia, some Alabama, some Mississippi, some New York, and some California, Texas, and some North Carolina, and some South Carolina, and Virginia, some Illinois, and some West Virginia, some Dakota, South Dakota, North Dakota. See, I can't name all the different places now. If I leave anybody out, don't get mad, because I just, you know, just a cat trying to keep it going. Some Ohio, too, yeah. Some Indiana, Michigan. Yeah, I'm coming from the good Kentucky, Tennessee. Yeah, I'm getting it together, you know. Just give me a little time.